Hello and welcome to the CFO Playbook podcast. My name's David McClelland. I'm a journalist and broadcaster. I cover business, technology, leadership, and here on the CFO Playbook, I get under the skin of how world-class finance leaders from across various industries leverage technology, as well as set goals, make plans, manage teams, and much, much more. And in today's episode, we're talking about FinOps, finance operations, the hybrid CFO-COO role, and the part that technology is playing in shaping how finance supports the business.
CFOs are going to have to be far more aware of the tools and tech stacks that are out there and how they're available. It's no longer just actually strategically, what do we do with these numbers? They need to upskill on how do we get these numbers faster? So, or how do we get to these numbers in a more automated way. And I think that's the biggest transition for CFOs, is they're probably not just going to have the privilege of reviewing the numbers and creating the strategy with the CEO. They're going to need to know how these numbers can happen in a more automated manner.
A reminder that CFO Playbook is here every month with exclusive interviews and insights from world-class finance leaders. So do subscribe and listen back through our extensive back catalogue. Don't be afraid to get in touch either, as many of you do. Your suggestions really do help to shape our shows. Right, let's meet today's guest.
This episode of the CFO Playbook is brought to you by Soldo. Trusted by over 25,000 organisations across 31 countries, Soldo combines pre-programmed cards, an intuitive app, and a powerful management platform to replace manual processes with efficiency and control. To find out more or to book a demo, visit soldo.com.
Charlie Hunt, Origin Fractional CFO and COO, thank you for joining us on the CFO Playbook.
Thank you for having me.
It's good to have you here. Tell me where you're joining us from today. And tell us a bit about Origin as well.
Yeah, so I am joining you from a sadly rainy Bristol today. I know, awful, especially for June. So I set up Origin around 24 months ago, just shy, after a career in a mix of finance and operations, to work in an integrated way with startups and scaling businesses. So not to just consult, not just to give advice and then walk away, to be integrated as part of the business to help develop out their finance and operations, both within teams of people, within the tools that they're using, their approach, their plan and strategy for growth, to be able to help and support that journey that they're on.
And you work as a fractional CFO and COO across multiple clients. I definitely want to come into that element of it as well in a few moments' time. But lots for us to peel away, Charlie. The chat that I want to have today in particular is going to be around FinOps, finance operations, what it means in practice, and also the role that technology is playing in the evolution of how finance guides the business. That sounds like a good plan to you?
Sounds great. Yeah.
Fantastic. Well, first of all, though, just a bit more about you, Charlie. What's your background? What led you to setting up Origin and choosing to work in this way, particularly with startups and scale-ups, as you describe?
Sure. So I'm going to go way back, but I'll keep it concise, I promise. So I used to work, I started my career in retail banking, and I worked there within 2008 during the financial crisis.
Oh, okay.
The landscape changed drastically, and it was a tough place to be, and I didn't feel like it was going to be an impactful career. It wasn't a place I wanted to stay. So I really thought about what do I enjoy about this? And it always sort of came back to the numbers. It was the financial element of what I was doing that I was enjoying. So that led me into working in a couple of large corporates, training up, working in different finance teams. And finance at that point was really siloed. So you'd have different departments doing completely different functions. It felt like there wasn't a lot of cohesion in what I was doing. And it was really hard to tie back what I was studying back to the kind of role I was working in, because you're studying the breadth of finance within business. And actually, I was doing one small part of it, and you'd have to completely change department to see how that might link to another part of the business and for it to make sense. At that point, I realized maybe a large corporate wasn't for me. That wasn't going to be my approach, wasn't going to be my style of working. And I moved into the world of SMEs. And that's really where my journey of finance and operations took off. So I've worked in a mix of sectors from manufacturing, marketing, and then developing out what I was doing and tying back the numbers to the operational side of the business. So working up as a financial controller, finance director, I then transitioned into an operations director for a different agency. And that started to really build out the scope of how the two correspond for me, specifically within my career. And I was very fortunate in the role that I was a finance director for about 7 years. I was given so much more of the business to be involved in than just the finance. So I feel like actually the operations part has always existed for me, making sense between what the numbers give you and then how you action that and make change within a business. Being in a smaller organization, I was given that scope and that understanding quite early on in my career. That then developed into working in a few different SME startup scale-ups. And actually, there's a sense of, unless there's continual change, growth, scale, your role as a finance or operations director, it's often to hit the ground running, make big change, align things, create those efficiencies, and then what? It then feels like this pause, that if the business you're in isn't acquiring other businesses, if the business you're in isn't scaling at pace, if you've done a good job of fixing those elements, fixing those efficiencies, creating those systems and approaches, building those teams, you shouldn't have to keep doing it. So I felt like, I've done it. What do I do next? And actually now, the birth of Origin has come from that I can work in a fractional way, creating that change, but the business doesn't need me 5 days a week, 52 weeks a year. Actually, it might need me 3 days a month, and then almost sort of slowly work my way back into just the strategic overview.
There's lots there that's fascinating, and particularly the journey that you went on from big corporate there, and feeling that, experiencing the siloed nature of sometimes working in those big organizations, and then kind of busting out of that and finding a way in which you can lead a more integrated exist, add benefit from integrating finance and operations. And I kind of want to come on to that, the hybrid CFO COO role that you've that you're nurturing with Origin. There's certainly an emerging trend of bringing these roles closer together, not only in startups and scale-ups, but also in big corporates as well. And I guess that's based on the improved alignment of the finance and the operations teams. How do you tend to work, though? Is it a case of wearing two different hats? At this moment, I'm thinking with my CFO hat on, and then have to swap them over and put your COO hat on? Or is there a special hybrid COO-CFO hat that you wear all the time, given your experiences?
I'd say it's just one big hat. I think that's the safer approach. A huge hat that you can turn around and it can look different for whatever you need it to do. No, I think it's really key that they're connected. I don't see how they can't be. I think I'm very biased because my career has given me the gift of being able to see both sides of the business that you get maybe from being in that smaller scale up or startup that you might not always experience in a larger corporate. But as you said, even larger corporates are looking at merging those two roles, working so much more closely together. And I think for me, it starts with the numbers. In any client I work with, you start with the numbers. Where are you at? Where do you want to be? What are the numbers currently telling us about the organization? And you almost then park that information and then ask the operational questions. Who's in what team? What are you currently using in your tech stack? Which teams do you feel are struggling? Which teams are clearly thriving? Actually, what functions are missing in the business? Who have you got managing marketing? How is this working? And then you use both of those to build out the picture of how the business scales.
It makes absolute sense when you put it like that, and particularly in startups, scale-ups, the smaller end of the corporate spectrum. Maybe they don't have enough resource to have dedicated CFO and COOs as well. So having an individual who is able to have oversight of both of those functions, if you do want to split them out, but take responsibility and drive both of those forward, makes absolute sense to me, and absolute sense to you as well, I'm sure, those who you work with.
Yeah, I think so. And I think it works so well, I believe, for both parties. Again, I'm clearly biased, but it just does, because you have these businesses who maybe they can't afford a full-time finance director, ops director, CFO, COO. You know, that they are, you know, well-paid roles. They really are.
Yeah.
But actually, as I've said, do you always need someone in the business creating change, moving it forward? If actually you've grown to where you now want to be, if you've created those efficiencies, you can't keep fixing things when they're working. So actually, as a fractional CFO, COO, you get the variety of working with different clients, and also creating that experience that you can take on to other clients that you wouldn't get in one business continuously. And these smaller businesses get the benefit of your skill set, your experience, without having to commit to you being in the business full time.
So talk to me then about working in a fractional way that you do. How does that actually work in practice for you? Because with a lot of different clients at once, it sounds like a really exciting challenge to keep all of those plates spinning. But from a kind of mental agility point of view, as well as from a practical time management point of view, what kind of strategies do you have in place to manage all of your clients' workloads effectively?
Sure. So I work in a days per month approach, which then creates a really nice, clear boundary for who I can work with, how their expectations of how often I'll be working with them. There is obviously a sense of flexibility around that. Scaling businesses need flexibility. That's really key. But essentially, you would book in X amount of days over a period of months, and then we plan out the work we want to get done in that time, and we work through it.
Sounds very straightforward when you put it like that. And you also said earlier on that depending upon the nature of the engagement, whether it's a strategy plus execution role, that you may front load those engagements so that you've got, say, 10 days a month or whatever it is, and then that kind of peters out, but hits a more regular drumbeat as it just comes down to strategy thereafter.
Absolutely. And for me personally, I think once a business hits somewhere between 50 to 75 heads, they could potentially warrant a full-time me in one capacity or another. So there is a sense of working my way out of a business if that is where they're heading in that direction. So it depends on where they are now, where they'd like to get to. We can then structure, do we front load and then, as you'd say, peter it out? Or do we just say, no, look, it's going to be 7 days a month ongoing, and then we'll review in X months?
And surely part of your goal must be to see yourself out of a job, because if you're there partly helping them to grow and headcount is as a result of that growth, then ultimately, you know, ideally you won't be there for a super long time.
Absolutely. And also, you know, you can be working with scale-ups or startups that are looking to exit, looking to take part, be acquired. So yeah, there would be, I worked with a client last year for, I think it was around 9 months, because actually the plan was, right, we want to get to investment. Let's get the numbers right for investment. Let's get the operational structure lean for investment. And then that's what they achieved at the end of the year. So I did effectively work my way out of that business. Yeah.
And the great thing in working in this way, as you've mentioned, it's about the breadth of experience that you have across lots of different sectors. What kind of contexts have you found yourself working in? You know, startups and scale-ups, is it predominantly in the tech space? Have you got some other non-tech-based clients that you tend to work with as well?
I do, yeah. So it's a mix. And initially, because the bulk of my experience was in the marketing sector, I thought I would do fractional work for marketing agencies. This makes the most sense. This is my experience. I feel like I could add the most value in that sector and space. But once you start working for yourself and opportunities come up, it's very different. I think you start to lean into, great, I've got a new potential client. I've not necessarily got a load of experience in this sector, but I certainly can see how it applies. And it's a beautiful thing about finance and operations that exists in every business. So it's not always about your experience in a sector. It can quite often be about what you already know that you can take into a new space. But yeah, over the last 24 months, I've worked with e-commerce clothing companies, ed tech, recruitment, some marketing and PR as well, record label. So like a huge, huge range, climate tech as well in there. So yeah, a real mix of clients.
Oh, fascinating stuff. Fascinating stuff. And I guess one of the challenges about working, particularly with startups and scale-ups in that fractional way, is how quickly you can deliver value. You know, you mentioned it earlier on about hitting the ground running and making an impact straight away. And I guess as a kind of hired hand, that's what you need to be able to do. What tactics, strategies do you have for being able to really hit that ground running with a new client?
Yeah, that is such a great question, but it does really vary on what they want to achieve, the sector they're in. I know I said already that I start with the numbers, because I think actually a really simple alignment is, what are your numbers telling you at the moment and what information is missing from those? Are you tracking your cash flow, your runway? How detailed is your P&L? What are your reports specifically telling you about profitability within teams? You know, what's your time to profitability for certain products or even salespeople who are new into the business? It can just really vary. So I think starting with the numbers, really understanding what founders want to gain from having me in the business, and then listing out those objectives and just striking through. So it can really vary. And once you start getting into the numbers, you might be identifying something that founders never understood or really realized about their business. People have really preconceived ideas about, well, this works great, this is going really well, and this bit isn't. I need you to help me work that out. And actually, we might dig into the bit that's working really well and see it's not quite as profitable as they had thought. So it depends upon what the numbers are going to uncover. For me, finding quick wins is really important, because the biggest thing with being a CFO, especially on a fractional basis, is building trust. So there's going to be a lot of change management that has to happen as part of scaling a business out. Improving systems, setting up teams, change management is a huge part of that. And trust is the first step on that ladder. If someone doesn't trust you to make those decisions and support those decisions in their business, the whole thing's a non-starter, essentially.
It comes back to that, something of a cliche now, I suppose, which is about the CFO, COO, as we're talking about with you, being the co-pilot to the CEO or to the business. And if you're going to have someone who is jointly in control of steering the ship, the aeroplane, whatever it is, as well as being a second pair of eyes and scanning the horizon, maybe picking out things that you as the founder or the CEO haven't spotted yourself, absolutely there needs to be trust, because anything that you both miss could cause a real problem later on down the line. We were chatting earlier on about the hybridization of CFO and COO roles. And that leads us on to the next thing I want to chat about today, Charlie, which is FinOps. And it's a term that's gained some real momentum over the last couple of years. I was looking at Google Trends earlier, and the searches, the relative interest, I think they call it, around the term FinOps, it shot up from September, October 2023 onwards. Fascinating. I'd love to do a bit more research into why. And, you know, maybe the term follows on from the tech world, you know, where we've seen DevOps, DevSecOps, CloudOps, DataOps emerge as these kind of portmanteau terms, but also philosophies. It's not just a word, it's a philosophy about bringing disparate functions closer together. So for you, Charlie, what is FinOps, finance operations, and what does it mean in practice?
Yeah, absolutely. I think for me, it means two different things. So there's FinOps, which for me is financial operations. So that's actually quite specific. I think that's looking into the efficiencies, automation, tech stack of a finance team and setup? What does that look like? How can it be improved? How can we pull tech in to create the efficiencies within our financial operations? So that could be improving accounts receivable, accounts payable, how you pay your staff, how you do your reporting, how you run your cash flow, looking to draw in automation in to improve that. The second side is finance and operations. So I sit over both, and I do think both are really key. But for me, that bigger piece is not having siloed finance and operational teams. It's pulling it all together. And I think that's really important. So actually, the cogs within the business, how it all turns, draw that back into the numbers. And what are the numbers telling us about how we need to improve? How do we oil those cogs better? How do we get this machine moving more efficiently? And that's not just by pulling in tech for your expenses, tech for your accounts receivable. That's by saying, right, we need to communicate the numbers more clearly across the business. We need to involve more teams in what finance are doing. Actually, the management accounts are showing this at the moment. We need to look at how we restructure that team or the spend we're using in marketing. So it's, for me, two quite distinct things.
Business outcomes, technology that supports the business outcomes, and looking at the technologies that can help you to drive efficiencies, if that's one of the goals here. But being a little bit more specific, if we can, what are the kind of key technologies or key capabilities from those technologies that you believe are essential here that kind of fit into that first part of the FinOps piece?
Yeah, okay. So definitely take what would have been 10 years ago, the separate departments of finance, and you can add a piece of tech into each of those to improve it drastically. So let's say we've got payroll, accounts receivable, accounts payable, management accounts. You could have a great tool in each of those areas of finance that just makes the whole thing more synchronized. So as I said early on, big corporate siloed teams, you can start to pull all of that together and make it much more efficient by using a good tool. So pushing your management accounts into something like Reach or Fathom, so that you're starting to have automated reporting that is aligned with the specific KPIs of your business, looking at using tools for expenses, for supplier payments, automating how you make your payments. You know, no one's sat making manual bank payments anymore. And if they are, they definitely shouldn't be. So, you know, there's just pulling those tools in. Now, there's tools for tools' sake, definitely. You have to ensure they're relevant for the business, they're researched. Be prepared to get it wrong. Bring a tool in, set it up. It could be painful and it might not give you the results you're specifically looking for. But I do really believe in the value of a synchronized tech stack for that FinOps approach in finance.
Yeah, I think another one of those definitions pieces, and again, this feels a bit like it's a Brave New World a little bit, is, you know, you can look, as a lot of tech vendors do, they look at FinOps specifically around cloud and around cloud usage optimization. So you go to some of the tech vendors, that's specifically what they lean into when they talk about FinOps. But we're talking here, you're talking here about a much broader, much holistic, still involving tech and the tooling to drive business forward and to drive efficiencies, but not just how can I save money on my cloud costs, for example. When you are moving into an organization and you're beginning your engagement with them, and they don't necessarily employ some of these tool sets, they aren't operating in a FinOps type manner, what are the challenges that you face with regards to transitioning or transforming them to leverage more digital tool sets?
Fortunately, because of where we are in terms of modernization of accounting generally, most businesses are already on a great cloud accounting software. So you're probably starting with something like Xero. Great. There are so many tools that something like Xero will integrate with. But before we even look at integrating tools, are you utilizing Xero to its full potential? So there are lots of great tools out there. And have you set up the automated reporting that exists? Have you already redesigned your P&L to be relevant to your business, to your sector in Xero? It allows you to do that. You can design your perfect P&L to give you really good management accounts. You don't have to start pulling in, you know, high-end expensive softwares that you don't need yet until you've completely utilized what you have. There are lots of bolt-ons to something like Xero that already exist to be able to support with automated bank payments, to support with uploading invoices, if we're going to get granular. Now, there's limitations to something like Xero, so you have to understand the business objectives for the next 6, 12, 24 months. At that point, you can then start to look at operationally what is going to improve here if we start to pull in tool X. Right, okay, that's going to save someone potentially half their week because this is going to handle accounts payable invoices for them. They're no longer going to have to go through that. We can automate how these invoices are coded, how that is then pulled through into the P&L reporting in Xero. So it's about getting what you have working first and then adding in as you go, ensuring that's then being utilized. It's that change management piece again. Is everybody using it? Is everybody interacting it? Are we maximizing value on our new tool? Great. Next efficiency. So it's just really segmenting what needs improving and reiterating and repeating as you go to ensure that it's continually utilized.
Do you know, I've had so much experience of that when you buy a invest in a piece of software or a SaaS product, and you onboard it in 2019 with a certain feature set, and it's great, and you carry on using it, and then in 2024 you suddenly realize that it's almost entirely changed. There's so many more features and capabilities within that, but because you spend your day using that piece of software for what you initially invested in it for, you don't necessarily understand all of the amazing new things that it is able to do. And again, having that fresh pair of eyes, that's somebody who is very much current with the capabilities of that software, of that service, of that platform, to come in and say, actually, just by ticking that box there and plugging these two things together, you could save a whole load more time. I didn't even know that was available. So that insight, I think, is really important.
Absolutely. And I would, just to add to that, I would say, if you have a tool, if you're using a new tool, and even if you think it's perfect and you're getting full value, if you are not subscribed to their mailing list, you are missing a trick, because they will be emailing you about the new features, the new products, how it's improving. It is worth the 5-minute scan when that lands in your inbox to go, ah, great, new feature. Let's see how we can utilize this and use it. I think that's a really key part of FinOps is going to keep getting more technical, more advanced. There's going to be more options, more tools out there. You've got to keep upskilling and learning about what they're offering so that you can ensure that your finance function is moving along with the tools that you're using.
And just taking a bit of a step backwards from there, you know, we're talking about technology playing a role in changing how finance works within an organization. And it changes it from being a kind of transactional, can I have this report, please? Oh, yes, I'll have it to you by Friday kind of relationship, to one that can be, should be, and indeed, when you work in a more integrated way, like you do, a whole lot more strategic. So how do you see this kind of transformation enabled by digital tooling changing the role of, well, the CFO and the finance teams around them in terms of how they show up with the rest of the organization, in terms of how they feel that they can deliver value to the organization?
Absolutely. I think, firstly, before we get to the CFO element, the finance team itself, I think that the digitization is going to remove a lot of that transactional finance. It already has. It's not, I think, I know. It already has removed a lot of that. So a lot of that manual work sitting in spreadsheets, that's moved on. And there is a place for that, for sure. But that's now a more analytical style approach. So you're allowing the automation to do the transactional work, and then you have finance team members who have the scope and time to be able to review those numbers in more detail, where they would be focused on importing sheets, getting the transactions into the accounting system, into the financial reporting, they can now spend their time being more analytical and reviewing that information. So that's a huge upskilling. That's great. That has removed and is removing the need for people spending hours and hours manually uploading invoices, manually entering stuff. They can now be checking that data, getting things more accurate, and taking advantage of those great tools out there. For the CFO, I think it's that transition's really different. You've probably got people who have built fantastic careers working as finance directors and CFOs across a multitude of sectors and businesses. But actually, if they don't know about these tools, if they aren't teaching themselves about these tools and understanding how they can use that to impact their teams, huge trick missed. So I think it's going to mean that CFOs are going to have to be far more aware of the tools and tech stacks that are out there and how they're available. It's no longer just actually strategically, what do we do with these numbers? They need to upskill on how do we get these numbers faster? So, or how do we get to these numbers in a more automated way? And I think that's the biggest transition for CFOs, is they're probably not just going to have the privilege of reviewing the numbers and creating the strategy with the CEO. They're going to need to know how these numbers can happen in a more automated manner.
It's very much a dynamic world out there, whether it's tariffs or conflicts or natural disasters. And particularly, you know, that's very much true for big corporates as well as for startups and scale-ups as well, who can be affected by anything from a supplier going bust to a customer change of strategy. So I wonder, what is your counsel to leaders on how they can embed agility to, you know, pivot when necessary and resilience into their operational models?
Yeah, well, as ever, starting with the numbers and working in a more efficient way, that's always going to make you more agile. So actually, do you have a cumbersome, large finance team? Is your month-end close taking you 14 days? Is the decisions you're then making taking another 5? To create that agility, to be able to be more reactive to your economic surroundings, you're going to have to create that efficiency first, which is always going to come back to that FinOps approach, that build your tech stack out, make things more efficient, upskill your team. That gives you the scope and time to work way more efficiently, to be able to be reactive where it is required. That felt like a politician's answer.
No. You mentioned some of the different sectors in which you worked earlier on, some of the non-tech sectors as well, something like, construction or something like that. Are you seeing adoption of technologies to support finance operations in sectors that aren't techie by default? Or are there still some barriers, some hurdles there?
There's definitely still barriers and hurdles. And I think more traditional sectors are always going to take longer to join, the tech businesses. That's just natural. That's always happened. Manufacturing, construction, these are very traditional sectors. The old school is still sat there running it in lots of ways. So a really specific example, I have a client in the construction recruitment space, and they have all of their clients are sat within construction. Some of those clients will only accept invoices in the post. And it's 2025. That is still a thing. So that does, that answers that, of course, there are still people who are not meeting us at email, let alone building out a tech stack for scale and success. So I'd like to say they are in the minority. And I think I probably can confidently say that. But if you imagine the knock-on effect something like that is going to have for their customers and the rest of their suppliers, it's, they're sat there in that sector still. And I think as well, those more traditional sectors still suffer from payment terms lagging, needing factoring, needing additional financial support in a way that the tech sector just doesn't. Cash moves a lot faster through the tech sector than it does through a traditional manufacturing or construction-based business. And that will naturally have a knock-on effect on where your priorities sit. So actually, do you have the privilege of saying, hey guys, let's improve how we manage our expenses, when actually the key thing to the business is cash flow, and you're working in a traditional space that you need a full-time credit controller? Tech companies aren't going to need that. So it's really important that you understand the economic landscape of those sectors so that you can ensure that you've got the right skill set just in people before you even think about the tech stack.
Reports of the death of the fax machine have been greatly exaggerated, it would seem, in some sectors.
Yeah, I mean, I think a fax machine would be an improvement on the post. So, yeah, but it does happen. And I think a lot of people can forget about that, because if you're working in a tech space, if you're working in a big corporate, those kind of things just don't exist anymore. But they do in small business. That is out there. That is real.
So in summary then, and I think this is going to be a pretty easy sort of home run response, or maybe not. I don't want to put words into your mouth. But as we kind of wrap up this FinOps bit of the chat, are you expecting FinOps to become the next big thing for finance teams?
Yeah, I mean, if it hasn't started to, you're missing a trick. It's really key. There are still nuances that are needing to be ironed out. So you can automate where all of the costs are going through a great AP system, sure. But if something needs apportioning, if something is specific for R&D, if you know there's the nuances and context to your business, it still needs that human intervention. But if you're not having to have a full-time team member doing transactional finance, you can have a more analytical team member who's focused on variance analysis, focused on R&D, focused on, you know, where costs are apportioned within your business. So it's happening already. We will continue to see improvements like we are with all tech. So if we think about AI 24 months ago to AI this morning, drastically different. It's exactly the same for FinOps. You have to start using it now so that you can continue to upskill yourself and your teams for the next 24 months, because it's gonna jump again.
Charlie, thank you so much for making FinOps feel so tangible in a way that, for me, I don't think it had felt tangible before, and giving me some really specific examples of what it is, where it fits into an organization, the kind of ways in which organizations are benefiting from it, as well as some of the challenges. But like you say, it is it's a rocky road ahead. We've had 24 months of transformation driven by the likes of generative AI, and goodness knows what the next 24 months will have in front of us. But you got to be on that. You got to jump in that car to enjoy the roller coaster ride, right?
Sure, something like that.
Yeah, there are better metaphors, but that's the one I'm going with for now.
No, thank it's you. Fine. I like it. It's good.
Thank you very much indeed for that. A couple of things before we wrap up today, though. Here on CFO Playbook, we speak with a wealth of finance leaders from around the world and from across many different industries. And we hear so many unique insights and nuggets of knowledge. And we thought, what if we had a virtual CFO Playbook? Into each month, we submit a new entry from our guest, a piece of advice that you wish you were given, and an experience that has helped to shape you, or maybe just a tip to help fellow finance professionals. So Charlie, I'll put this to you. What would be your contribution into our CFO Playbook?
My contribution would be to be curious and embrace technology. I think early on in my career, it was clear that accounting was very structured, the way you did it, the way you reported, the way everything was handled. Learn how it's done, keep doing it, keep producing numbers. And it was very formulaic and cyclical, and an approach to finance that just doesn't need to exist anymore. So yeah, be curious about how things can be improved, even if they feel like they work. How could they work even better? And embrace technology to create that change.
Be curious. I like that. And that's not the first time I've heard that as a piece of advice recently. It's a piece of advice that I give to my kids. And if that means that they're asking questions of me all the time, then it's hard work, but it's hard work that I'm prepared to go with, because they're just asking the right questions. Brilliant. Thank you very much indeed for that. And at the end of all of the conversations that we have here on CFO Playbook, we like to ask a parting question. We call it our showstopper question. And in this series of the podcast, we're asking our guests to reflect on a phrase. And that phrase this season is progressive finance. So, Charlie, what does progressive finance mean to you?
Oh, okay. So I think progressive finance is about enabling greater collaboration across teams, whether they're specific elements of finance or broadly across a business, to create smarter decisions. So yeah, collaboration and better decision making. It's really key not to silo out teams. If you want to scale and grow, progressive finance is going to mean working really collaboratively with both people and technology.
It's been great to collaborate with you today, Charlie. Thank you very much indeed for joining us here on CFO Playbook.
Thank you for having me.
And don't forget to join us every month here on the CFO Playbook for more insights from finance leaders. Get in touch. Many of you do. Your suggestions really do help to shape our shows. Full details of how to do that are in the show notes. But for now, from me, David McClelland, until next time, bye-bye.